Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Monday, March 28th, day 16 of 9/11 on trial. I'm Lisa Giuliani, and you're watching Wing TV.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Before we get rolling today, a couple quick thank yous and announcements. On Saturday, we did two very excellent radio interviews. The first was with Leyland Lehrman. He's on 1260 AM KTRC out in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Right.
Mexico. He did a great job.
Mother Media Radio.
Right. Then at midnight, we did Erskine Overnight with the host Erskine. Had some good callers that night. Even Alex Jones called in.
Yeah.
Told everybody to buy 9/11 on trial. So thank you to both of them, and we definitely look forward to doing Erskine's show again.
Mm-hmm.
Also now, on the Wing TV homepage, check out the article. It's called 9/11 Second Wave, Avoiding Pratfalls. And it's about an article that recently came out, and I address it then to all the people who are new to the 9/11 field and just letting them know, don't make the same mistakes we made right from the very start. So
right.
A definite article, spread it around to people. Lastly, here's somebody that gets what we're doing. His name's Bob F. down in Austin, Texas, and he bought two different bulk quantities of books, 9/11 on trial. The first 10, he said, he gave out to all the central Texas congressmen in his area, including Senators Hutchinson, Cornyn, also Congressman Tom DeLay, McCall, Carter, Lamar, Smith, Lloyd Doggett. Then he said the second batch of them he's given to all the local media in Austin, Texas. That's the newspapers, the radio, the TV. Also, Lisa got contacted by someone today that's going up to New York for some kind of meeting, going to get 40 copies of the book, hand them out to people. So, you know, this is what we have to do. We have to spread the word, and thank you to everybody out there that's doing that.
That's right. It's important to get the truth out, and this is the way we're going to do it. So we hope everybody jumps on board with this. Now we're going to join witness number 12, who's going to provide the testimony regarding exploding pulverized concrete. And now let's go to Judge Alan Kirkpatrick.
Please be seated. Court is now in session. Today we will continue with the people's case against the United States federal government in regards to the events of September 11, 2001 at the World Trade Center Towers in New York City. Let us proceed. Witness, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Today's testimony will deal with exploding pulverized concrete. Witness number 12, please state your name for the record.
John Knight.
Thank you. Mr. Knight, how much concrete was used in the two World Trade Center towers?
425,000 cubic yards.
Okay. And after each tower fell to the ground in Manhattan, what did witnesses describe regarding this concrete?
Dr. Robert Schuller was on television telling about his trip to the ruins. He announced in the interview that there was not a single block of concrete in the rubble. From the original 425,000 cubic yards of concrete that went into the buildings, all was dust.
Were there any other reports?
Well, the History Channel spoke with Colonel John O'Dowd of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. O'Dowd, who is no stranger to disaster scenes, said that he never saw anything like what he saw in this site where the towers once stood. At the World Trade Center site, he said it was like everything was pulverized. Other than miles of twisted steel, beams, and columns, there was nothing recognizable in the debris pile. Nothing to indicate that the pulverized debris had been seconds earlier functioning 10 million square foot office building.
How about photographic evidence?
Photos of the rubble only show a few small pieces of concrete, which mean that virtually every piece of concrete shattered into dust. As a result, perhaps 100,000 tons of concrete in each tower was pulverized to a powder. Every photo of the rubber shows that nothing but steel remained. How can buildings fall down without at least some of the office furniture, plumbing, fixtures, and concrete survive? How is such annihilation possible?
Okay. What other descriptions were there?
Well, the steel structure was shredded. It was as if the buildings were put through some giant shredding machine. The perimeter wall was chopped into small pieces. The core structures were virtually obliterated, leaving no pieces more than 30 feet long. All that was left at the base of the towers was piles of twisted metal. Virtually all the non-metallic components and the contents of the building were converted into fine sub-100 micron powder. Nearly all the office components were pulverized beyond recognition. Over 1,000 bodies could not be identified. Even after a year of painstaking analysis with advanced DNA technologies, according to the medical examiner, everything was vaporized.
Does this seem peculiar to you?
Yes, because it takes hours to cremate a body with temperatures over 500 degrees Fahrenheit.
And how about the area around the World Trade Center complex?
Well, by the end of the day, the area around the Trade Center was covered with concrete, gypsum powder, up to several inches thick. The dust was deposited around Manhattan in tremendous quantities, up to 4 inches thick at distances 2,300 feet from the collapsed site.
Where did this thick layer of dust come from?
Most of the concrete drywall and fireproofing in the buildings ended up as dust.
And what was this phenomenon reminiscent of?
It looked as if a volcano had erupted nearby.
Sir, to your knowledge, did any volcanoes erupt on the morning of 9/11 in New York City?
No, they did not.
Why is this information about microscopic concrete dust important to know?
The significance of the thick coating of the powder becomes more apparent when you look at the collapses, burnings, and bombings of other buildings. When has a building produced such a large volumes of powder? This is not typical collapse.
Did this powder derive from burnt office supplies and equipment?
No, the streets of New York were full of powdered concrete and gypsum, not ash burned from office materials.
Does concrete typically turn into a fine dust?
No concrete that I have ever known pulverized like that. It's unnerving. My experience with concrete has shown that it will crumble under stress, but rarely does it just give up like a ghost turning to powder.
What are you saying, then, about every concrete floor from the first story to the 110th?
Every concrete floor disintegrated into particles before it hit the ground.
Okay, what would happen if we dropped a cinder block from the top of the World Trade Center towers to the street below?
A block of concrete dropped from a height of 1,360 feet would shatter into small pieces but not be reduced to microscopic particles. Also, David Ray Griffin quotes from Eric Hushmidt in the New Pearl Harbor, even concrete slabs hitting the ground at free fall speed would not be pulverized.
Then how could this phenomenon occur?
In order to pulverize concrete into powder, explosives must be used.
All right, sir. Please tell us more about this possible use of explosives.
When the towers started to collapse, they did not fall straight down as the pancake theory holds. They exploded. The powder was ejected horizontally from the buildings with such force that the buildings were surrounded by enormous dust clouds that were perhaps three times the width of the buildings themselves.
And you attribute this to the use of explosives?
What other explosive could turn concrete into powder and then eject it horizontally, 150 feet or more? Why didn't the pieces simply fall down? Why were they ejected with such force?
Was anything else ejected from the towers?
Heavy pieces of steel were ejected in all directions for a distance up to 500 feet, while aluminum cladding was blown up 700 feet away from the towers.
That's nearly 2 football fields for the heavy steel and over 2 football fields for the external aluminum casing.
Correct. There's a gash in the World Financial Center 3 about 400 feet away from the North Tower. It's several hundred feet up.
Was the concrete dust also ejected outward?
I'm not sure. But yes, I think the dust clouds sprued from the towers in all directions at 50 feet per second.
Okay, that's roughly about 34 miles per hour, is it not?
That's correct.
What else can you tell us about the concrete dust being thrown from the towers?
Each of these mushrooming tops remained centered around the tower's vertical axis, and they expanded about 3 times each tower diameter in 5 seconds, and about 5 times their diameter in 10 seconds.
Okay, and as for the objects being propelled outward, along with the dust, which was thrust out ahead of the other?
Solid objects were thrown ahead of the dust.
And what does this indicate?
This is a feature of explosive demolition.
What about the few pieces of steel that were inspected by FEMA? What was found?
The steel was thoroughly clean of its spray-on insulation.
Can any of these anomalies be attributed to or caused by fire?
Fire did not and could not have caused it, the Twin Towers or any other building's concrete to spontaneously explode into a fire powder, nor could the fire have caused steel beams to be broken and propelled hundreds of feet horizontally.
All right. Could fire have been the energy source for this dramatic transformation of concrete to powder?
Well, concrete does not turn to powder very easily, even if roasted in fire.
Is there any way that an everyday person could test this for themselves?
Well, yeah. Build a house out of your child's Lincoln Logs, then collapse it by pulling out one of the pieces. See if any of the wooden logs are, like, thrust violently out across the room.
In your opinion, then, did the tower simply fall down?
As anyone can plainly see from any photos and or videos of the destruction of the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers did not fall apart or fall down. Each exploded in a progressive wave from their upper floors and near the impact zones downward toward their basement.
For clarity, explain what happened as the buildings descended toward the ground.
While they collapsed completely and vertically, at the same time, the fractured steel and other solid debris was propelled at high speeds horizontally hundreds of feet in all directions.
So the building was falling downward while huge explosions were being created horizontally?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Did these huge eruptions of concrete dust begin immediately as the towers began to collapse?
Yes. When the upper portion of the North Tower fell down onto the base, it fell a distance of only 1 or 2 floors.
Would it be traveling very quickly at this point?
It would not be traveling very fast when it hit the base.
And why is that?
Well, you know, because it should at most be accelerating under gravity, I think about, like, you know, 32 feet per second.
So, in simplest terms, it wouldn't have built up a head of steam?
No, it's very hard to imagine a physical mechanism generating that much dust with concrete slabs burning into each other at 20 or 30 miles an hour.
But even at this very early juncture, are there huge clouds of concrete dust being ejected?
Well, you can see thick clouds of pulverized concrete being ejected within the first 2 seconds. That's when the relative motion of the top of the tower in intact portion was only a few feet per second. Dust begins to appear in a quantity in the very earliest stages of the collapses when nothing else is moving fast relative to anything else in the structure.
Was the energy possessed by this falling cap within the first second or two enough to pulverize the concrete?
Within the first few seconds of the collapses, the motion of the falling top relative to the inact structure of only a few feet per second, clearly the speed of the falling top relative to the building was insufficient to convert concrete to fine powder.
And after the first floor fell only a few feet, what would we expect to happen?
It might crack the floors, you know, maybe bend some steel beams and even, you know, bust a few holes in the flooring, but how could it shatter into dust falling at such short distance?
So could this dust actually be smoke from the burning fire?
No.
And why not?
Well, prior to the collapse, only small whiffs of black smoke were seeping from the tower and rising upward. But when the top section began to tip, enormous clouds were expelled horizontally out of the tower all around the crash zone, These clouds were not the smoke of a fire. Rather, something was occurring inside the tower to create large amounts of powder, and then to expel the powder at high velocity. How could the powder be ejected with such a high velocity that the clouds reached perhaps, I don't know, like 200 or 400 feet wide?
To reiterate, how fast do things happen at the onset of a gravity fall?
During the first few seconds of gravitational fall, nothing is moving very fast.
So could the dust clouds be attributed to burning jet fuel combined with gravity?
The energy required to heat this huge mass sufficiently to reduce to powder is very difficult to account for by any reasonable combination of gravitational combustion effects without the input of additional energy from explosives.
So you're telling us that it would have taken an enormous amount of energy to transform concrete into powder.
Cracking a concrete block into two pieces requires energy. And converting a concrete block into powder requires even more energy. The smaller the particles, the more energy needed.
And how much concrete in each tower was turned to dust?
Well, perhaps 100,000 tons of concrete in each tower were pulverized into powder. This required a lot of energy. Plus, the powder was ejected with a velocity so high that the clouds, the dust expanded two or three times the diameter of the building. This also required energy. Thousands of steel beams in the building broke at their joints, and breaking their joints required energy. Energy was also needed to shred the congruent steel sheets that were part of every floor. The high temperatures of the rubble required energy as well.
So does accounting for the extremely powerful energy source become problematic?
The biggest and the most obvious problem that I see is the source of the enormous amount of very fine dust that we see generated during the collapse. Where does the energy come from to turn all this reinforced concrete into dust?
What if someone didn't believe that explosives were used? What would you tell them?
Well, I suspect that, many of the people who refuse to believe explosives were used have never tried to bust a concrete slab. Most people seem to believe that concrete has about this same strength as chalk.
But if it were this delicate, what would we see?
Well, it would not be safe to use in, your everyday bridges.
What if someone used a jackhammer to break concrete? Would it turn to powder?
Well, breaking concrete into pieces is a common procedure around the world. Pneumatic jacks are designed specifically for this purpose, but jackhammers do not pulverize concrete into powder. Rather, all they do is crack into pieces.
Is any powder created while doing so?
Well, only a small amount of the powder is created in this process.
Very good. What would it take to turn concrete into a fine dust?
Well, in order to pulverize concrete into powder, explosives must be used. Concrete will not turn into powder simply by falling down onto another piece of concrete.
Mr. Knight, I hate to be redundant, but can gravity alone accomplish this feat?
It is simply impossible to create and disperse this amount of material using only the energy of a gravitational collapse. Yet it is seen being ejected from the earliest moments of the collapses.
Were the floors at the onset moving very quickly?
At this point, the floors are moving at tens of miles per hour and provide no mechanism for grinding all that concrete into dust.
What would it take then?
Well, without the use of high explosives, such a rapid and complete pulverization is very difficult indeed to explain.
Strangely, the concrete was pulverized in midair, even before it hit the ground. Is this correct?
Well, Jim Marsh wrote in Inside Job, nearly all the concrete was pulverized in the air. So finely that it blanketed parts of the lower Manhattan within inches of dust. In a gravity collapse, according to Jim Hoffman, there would not have been enough energy to pulverize the concrete until it hit the ground, if then.
Did it take a force much greater than gravity to pulverize the concrete, which acted upon it before even hitting the ground?
You know, independent scientists cited by Hoffman in a highly technical paper has shown that the energy required for the pulverization of this much concrete and for the stupendous expansion of the dust clouds is as much as 100 times greater than could have been produced from each tower's gravitational potential energy. You know, I had like a mass times height.
Okay. Does this also apply to the solid objects thrown outward at least 500 feet?
Yes, again, Jim Mars quotes Jim Hoffman, the downward forces of a gravity collapse cannot account for energetic lateral ejection of pieces.
Plus, as we will hear from our next witness, these towers fell at nearly the rate of free fall. How would this affect the pulverization of concrete?
These astounding rates of fall, according to Hoffman's technical explanation, indicate that nearly all resistance to downward acceleration of the tops have been eliminated ahead of them.
They were eliminated ahead of them. I want to stress that. So the buildings were falling through the air with no resistance, a virtual gravity free fall, yet they're exploding outward at the same time. Is this correct?
Yes. Remember that the towers fell in at almost the speed of a gravitational free fall, meaning that little energy was expanded doing anything other than accelerating the floor slabs.
And this means what?
This means very little of the gravitational energy can be gone toward pulverizing the concrete.
Lastly, when we examine photos of these dust explosions, we see that some of the clouds are dark in color while others are light. Why do we see this?
The upper clouds are mixed with black smoke from the fire, while the lower clouds are pure concrete, gypsum, whatever else has been pulverized.
What does this mean?
The white clouds show that the pulverization process is occurring in the portion of the tower below the fire zone.
I see. And the part which wasn't even on fire?
Yes. This was the area of the tower that was cool, so the steel and the concrete in the area were still at their maximum strength.
Okay. Yet a pulverization process was still taking place where absolutely no damage had occurred. Is this correct?
Yes. The structure shattered away.
Thank you very much, Mr. Knight, and thank you, Your Honor. No further questions for this witness.